Okay, good evening, gentlemen. Hanukkah. So, Baruch, where do we leave off?
Everything we do is for our own pleasure.
We were created by God to get pleasure. We'll see later, there is an inyan of lishma. But if you look at, I'm not going to go into now, because I want to cover this thing. You see, the Rambam in the 10th chapter, in the last parak of Hilchos Tshuva, and the last parash Mishnayos of the Rambam in Makos, he talks about how rare it is to do a mitzvah lishma. You think, oh, yeah, I'll do it because I'm doing it for God. Gee, it's that easy, huh? It's funny how Rambam didn't figure that. So you go through it, just. When the Rambam says that to do those, to live in that way, ain't kol chacham zoicha lekach. Not every chacham can be zoicha to live doing things lishma. And remember, when the Rambam says chacham, he's not talking about my friends who are chacham. He's talking about his rishonim. You know what I mean? But let's go in because go over. All right. So yesterday, basic thing we talked about is. There's no point in finding out about God until you find out about yourself. And the two things we talked about yet, Shlomo, right? Shlomo, the two things that you have to know about yourself. Number one, you're a pleasure seeker. Don't apologize. God created you to get pleasure, right? You're Adam. He put you in a Gan Eden. You didn't do anything to deserve being created. Didn't deserve anything. Got it? The Rabbanu Shem wants you to get pleasure. And by the way, what is the maximum quantity of pleasure possible? Zorach.
Yeah.
What's the maximum quantity of pleasure you could possibly imagine?
A lot.
Oh my God.
No, stop with this religious stuff. Infinite. Infinite. Shlomo, an infinite being created you to get the most pleasure out of life and to give your brain to know the most you could possibly get is in the tapping into the infinite source of pleasure. You know what? No, you're going to get to Olam Haba no matter what you do. Just whether it's good for you and whether you're going to enjoy it or not, that's something else. After all, just not the part of the first name. Nochum. In any relationship, because God created a world to reflect the one thing we're here for. In any relationship. You and your wife, you and your friends, you and God. In any relationship between two parties, which party determines the strength of the relationship? The one who wants it the most or the one who wants it the least? The one who wants it most. Avi? What? Picture this, Nochum. So, don't worry. It's always so surprised. The women get it, men generally. I don't have a clue. Picture. Some A and B. A says to B, I love you dearly. B says to A, let's be friends. So what is it? A loving relationship or a friend relationship?
Friends.
A says to B, I love you dearly. B says to A, get out of my life. I don't want anything to do with you. So let's see. Somebody back there said 50-50, no? A wants it 100%. B wants it 0. Is it a 50-50 relationship? No. There's nothing there. The one who wants it most determines the maximum possibilities. The one who wants it least determines what is really there. Now, God is infinite. What can you do for him? And therefore, between you and God, which one of you want more that there should be a great relationship? You or God? No. Because, you see, when you're in a relationship because you need it, that's not very loving. In other words, the more God would, the more you're in a relationship that you need. Generally, see if we're making sense here. The more you're there because you're this rich guy, anything you're helping him because it's really good. The more you're doing it because of your needs, the more obvious you're not doing it because you care about them. You get it? You're that rich guy. The more you do it because of your need, the less you are caring about it. The less you need, you're multi-billionaire. The more you're doing things not because you need. The more evidence it is of caring. Got it? Zero need, God. Zero need equals infinite caring. Do we get it? Binyamin? The more you do things out of need, the more it's that your need is not because you care or love. The less you need, the more you're doing because you care or love. Zero need, which is only an infinite being. Zero need equals infinite caring.
Whatever you do is infinite caring.
What?
Whatever you give is infinite caring. Zero need.
Yeah. Sure. The Rav Hashem says, if you eat from that tree, you're going to die. Obviously, if you eat from the tree that causes you to be a body instead of an neshama, because beforehand, Adam was an neshama. You go up to Adam and say, Adam, why are you going around naked? You know what he'd say to you? That's not me, that's my body. A neshama can't be naked, and there's no point in putting clothes on a horse. Got it? You ever go horseback riding? Schleimer? Oh, were you wearing clothes? How about the horse? The horse was wearing clothes. Weren't you embarrassed? No, it's not me, it's my horse. It's the same thing. Why should Autumn get embarrassed because his horse wasn't wearing clothes? Your horse also doesn't wear clothes. You know something went really bad when he ate from the tree and he said, I'm naked. God said, well, he thinks that's him. Are we making any sense here? Yomen? What about people who go around half naked now? They're so comfortable being horses. Human beings should be a shtickle embarrassed. Not if you're so much more of a horse, there's no point. Horses aren't embarrassed when they're naked. Nebuch. Schloin, we making sense? I know, I see on your face.
Skaya.
I approve. Skaya. I appreciate it. Because little motor lamid means if I know it for me and I can't explain it to you, I don't really know it. So I appreciate it. Okay. And that's the idea of mi talmida yoser mikula. That's when you know it. Right? Appreciate it. Okay. So let's go back. Basic points. We are all pleasure seekers, the best of us, the worst of us. Jew, goy, everybody. The problem is the second stage. If I want pleasure, I gotta find out what time is. Shloime. Do you smoke cigarettes? Chas v'shalom. And therefore, when you have friends that smoke, you want to try to get them to stop. So you say, Shloime, don't you know I'm a pleasure seeker? Smoking gives me pleasure. Why? If you're a friend of mine, why do you want me to stop? Because the MS is. Right? You get it?
It's not real pleasure.
Oh, it's real pleasure. It's pleasure. Remember, physical pleasure is not nothing. The Rabban Hashem says, when you finish a siyum, a yontif, a Shabbos, you better eat food so that you really, on the lowest level, you know the Rabban Hashem wants you to get pleasure. You make a bracha on a piece of cake. By the way, what if you say that bracha without eating the cake? What do we call that? Fasais, you said something true. Baruch Atah, you're the source of all blessing. Hashem, the infinite one. Whoa, that's heavy. Elokeinu, my creator. Still too much. Melech, oh, king, I gotcha. All right, the guy who runs it. Bairei mina mezainas. So if I say that b'shemu malchus, why is it called a bracha levatola? Everything I said was true. It's a bracha levatola because if your stomach doesn't feel it too, it's a bracha levatola. You understand? You hear? You wasted the Rabban Hashem's name. You say, well, makes sense. You hear the idea? The Rabban Hashem wants you to be on all levels. Okay, so the two basics, you talked yesterday. Number one, you have to understand your pleasure. So God created you to get pleasure, hopefully to go, and when you finish the cake, you know, guess what? Maybe there's more to life than a piece of cake. Okay, two pieces of cake. All right. But no, where did the cake come from? Ooh, cause and effect. Next thing, can you imagine if the cake isn't, but can you imagine the one that created me? And by the way, did the Rabban Hashem have to create a world where things taste good? No, if you wouldn't have, you'd have to eat anyway. What's more important, eating cake or breathing. So why don't you make a bracha on breathing? Because you don't get any pleasure from it. Breathing is more important. However, it doesn't taste. When you taste, boy, you feel it on the lowest level. There's somebody who loves me. Then hopefully you know there's more to life than a piece of cake. Okay, so the two things. I want pleasure. To get it, I have to find out what time is. The problem is, it was the kid yesterday. Everybody wants pleasure, but we don't always want emes. Straight thing is, avas emes, a love of truth, because you know it's the best thing for you. But while we're generally more likely to love pleasure and not so about emes, so I want to look at three things about ourselves in which everything else will come down. And then tomorrow we'll talk about practical application of all different areas of life. Yiddish life, Goyish life, the world we're in, the 21st century, to understand where the problem is. The three things you have to know about yourself. What's your name, young man?
Tully.
No, him.
Me?
Yeah.
Chaim.
Tully, you can get a hold of you in a minute. Chaim. Were you here yesterday?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I don't remember where I hit it. Chaim, how old are you?
23.
23. At what age did you become a gadol?
I haven't yet.
We got to talk to doctors. Huh? At what age did you become a gadol?
13.
Against your will, I understand. I got it. Are you a child or an adult?
I like to think of myself.
Well, I'm not a psychiatrist. Just answer the question.
Hi.
No. Nochum, is he a child or an adult?
Both.
He's both. Remember. That's all right. See, Chaim, this doesn't make sense. 23 years ago, you came into this world as a child. A child is someone who wants pleasure but doesn't care about emes. Doesn't care about emes. And therefore, pleasure doesn't mean what will happen in the long run. Pleasure is whatever feels like at the time. You say to the little kid, your mom's not feeling well. Could you wait a couple hours? Eh, that's crazy. Oh, lollipops aren't good for you. Well, mama's from Michigan. Right? Of course they're good. A child is someone who says, I want pleasure. Emes is irrelevant. What's your name?
Menachem.
You know people like that? Little kids, right?
Yeah.
At 13, you became... Darn, he would have got it right if he would have just stayed with the first answer. 13, you became bar mitzvah. You know what a bar mitzvah is? That's where God activates the gadol within you, but the child who was there for 13 years refuses to leave. The gadol is activated, the child... my guess is you think you're agreeing with me, huh? Are you talking about him or you? We'll get there in a minute. The gadol is activated, the child refuses to leave. Now think about it. You're a gadol. At 14, you were an adult. At 15, you were an adult. No, because at 15, you were a 2-year-old adult, but a 15-year-old child. And therefore, in that inner combination, that you didn't see that there was an inner conflict, you were both. At 23, you are a 23-year-old child and a 10-year-old adult. Am I making any sense to you?
Yeah.
I'm 66. Am I a child or an adult?
Yeah.
Nochum?
Both.
Nochum, which am I more, child or adult?
Child.
Very good. No, because very good. Because I've been... very good. I'm just getting... I'm a 60... How old did I say? Yeah, right. I keep on thinking I'm 25. 60... And I think the way Gedolim go to live to 102, they only hang around young people, Baruch Hashem. Smart people. Smart move. I've been a child for 66 years. I've been an adult for 53. So why do some people say, oh, you're an adult? Because even with the context that you got very much right, Nochum, I am much more in balance than you. How old are you, Nochem? 20. 20. So 20 to 20-year-old child, 20 years a child and 7, you're literally 3 to 1. I'm 66 to 53. This is more balanced, but it depends what I've been doing. If I have been being goyver on my child to take care of my child, then I'm more likely to be used to being more of an adult. I still have the fight, but I'm used to winning. And that's what it means, with age comes wisdom. With age comes wisdom means you've known enough to override the child. If you're a fool, there's no fool like an old fool. In other words, after 6 8, you're still acting like a child, there's probably no hope. More hope for you guys than me. You get it? So at what point, Chaim? Yeah. Chaim, at what point do you become a total adult?
You don't.
Oi. Let's hear, Zach. The moment you die, and all of the illusions, remember, pleasure and truth, you are forced into the Olam HaEmes. You are forced the total reality. Right? At that point, will you find the situation, in Olam HaEmes, will you find your situation pleasant or unpleasant? Absolutely. Depends. The more you were involved in Emes, the more pleasant it'll be. The more you're involved in Dimyonis, the more you just won't belong there. Here's the idea. Slime, we got it? All right. So number one problem, Chaim, is you are both a child and an adult, but more of a child. And therefore, your natural natia is to go for pleasure without going for truth. Right? How do you override that? Two words. Two words in Hebrew or English. How do you override the child?
Give.
What?
You work with it.
How do you override the child? Bechira chofshis. That went. That. What's your name?
Ellie Mayer.
I'll come back to you. What's your last name?
Ellis.
Why did you get? Who are you named after, Ellie Mayer?
Ellie Mayer Bluch.
Yeah, you got a Cleveland connection? No, Tells connection.
I went to Tells.
Well, it was too late then. So how'd you get the name? Who went to your family?
My father went for a month of Weinberg. He was his grandpa or something like that.
I got you. There you go. Quick story. I said, Zederberger was a rav in Cleveland before the Telsus came. They were close. It was a very small oilam in those days, 1940s. So I heard it from him. I don't know if it became a famous story or not, but I remember hearing it just from the family. So the two Rosh Shivas were Rav Elimer Bloch and Rav Motel Katz. With the two Rosh Shivas, brother-in-laws, I think. And they were stuck in America when they started the Telsus Shiva. And that one of them, after, let's say, a half a year in America, one of them said to the other one, I don't know which is which, said, you know, we know Adam Nimshach Achar Svivoisov, everybody's affected by his world. But I'm amazed at how I haven't been affected by America. You know, the same Lavush, the same Sodorim, and say, you know, how come I wasn't affected by America? Anybody hear this story at all? No? So the other one, his brother-in-law, said, you know, I've been noticing lately how much America's been affecting you. Oh, but I didn't think that it affected you so much that you didn't think it was affecting you. That's everybody. You come to America and you wonder why the people, the Yeshiva Shoilem in America are very different, in Eretz Yisrael different. Because you were affected by different goyim than they were. At any rate, back to topic. Problem number one, you are both a child and all, but much more of a child. The only way to override Rebel Meir, Bechira Chofshis. The ability to say, activate your Bechira Chofshis, what do you have to go back to? Step number one, I want to get the most pleasure out of life. Number two, to get I got to know it's emes. I'm overriding the child. And begin to understand that that's probably the best way to understand why the Rebbe Hashem wants you to get married young and have kids as quickly. It's not to populate the world. That's what the Chinese are for, right? Talked about yesterday. Right? Getting married and having kids is where you're going to be forced to be an adult. You're going to love your kid. And if you let him make his childish decisions, he's going to destroy himself. And therefore, you're going to do things that he's going to yell and scream about. And he thinks you're doing it because you hate him. And you know you're doing it because you love him. And there's no way to explain it. You're going to take, when you get married, you have kids, you're going to take your kids to the doctor to get their shots?
Yes.
Yes. And the kid's going to yell and scream and look at you like you're a Nazi or handing over to this guy with the white coat and needles. Help, help, how can you do this to me? You're going to do it anyway?
Yes.
And when it happens, and he looks at you crying, saying, how could my father do this? And you know you're doing it because you love him, and there's no way to explain it. It's good for you. Listen carefully, Elimer, and you can hear the Rav Hashem laughing. And he'll say, okay, now you understand my problem with you. So problem number one with all of us, obviously, you know, we just get it. Problem number one is that we're both children and adults. We're much more children. It gets much worse, and then the third one will make it massively worse. We are all... Chaim, are you an animal or a human being?
An animal.
No, what? Nochum, is he an animal or a human being? Okay, but which is he more?
Animal.
Right. Okay, and the way to explain it, two different ways. If you're secular, secular is easier because I tell, when I say, I'm more of an animal, I say, what, you got to come to yeshiva, I should teach you the Darwin's theory of evolution, and so I got to teach everything here. You have been animals for millions of years. You've only been human for 5,776 years. Say, oh, no, where is that? So then you turn to Kahelas. Umoisar odom mina behemo oyin. Kol hovel. Right? The difference in you and an animal is zero. Pictured, and that's why I hold, you learn a tremendous amount from Darwin's theory of evolution. Forget about the fact that God didn't do it that way, but it looks great. It's a Musar Tikavort. You didn't know that he was a Musar, Darwin? No, it's a Musar Tikavort. To understand, Moisar Odom in Abahemo Oyin, everything that you do naturally is because you're an animal. You eat, you drink, you sleep. What? Chaim? Chaim, what are the two primary, as a healthy male mammal, what are your two primary drives?
Pleasure.
Yeah. What are the two things that as an animal you are natural, what?
One more time, sorry.
As a healthy animal, what are your two basic daily drives? That's a yeshiva bocher for you. Sleep doesn't. You don't have to drive to sleep. It just when you're an animal, it just happens. You don't have a mattress, you die. You know, but no. I mean, sleeping. Your two basic drives.
Multiply.
2, 4, 8, 16. Yeah, food and reproduction are your two basic drives. Do you begin to understand why the two biggest areas of Shulchan Aruch are dealing with your food choices and dealing with your reproduction choices? Obviously, Torah is to take an animal, and deal with how to make choices to be what we call a human being. So you would expect, if as an animal, your two basic drives are food and sex, obviously, then the biggest areas that you're going to have to look at is how do you deal with your food choices and how do you deal with your sex choices? What's so surprising? Just figure out what's going on. I also think, this is my own theory, that it used to be, when in an animal kingdom, what do they worry about first? Food or reproduction?
Reproduction.
production.
No food, because you're going to drop dead if you don't hunt and find food.
No, before a lion eats, then they have to make their territory.
Now, again.
Is that too crazy?
No, the issue is that without the food, you're not going to be around to do reproduction, right? And therefore, the food comes first. And I think even when I was a kid, wasn't exactly prehistory, when I was a kid, you know, people would say, oh, eat your food, they're starving in Europe. I don't know how that would help them any, but, right? People were still hungry. We've now gotten to the point where the food problem is no longer scarcity, it's obesity, too much. Which kind of explains me why everybody's comfortable there's enough food and they're doubling up on sex. I mean, you know, like, you got used to have two things you have to worry about, now there's only one. Don't be surprised. Things can figure out what's going on. You are part of the animal and human being, but you're much more of an animal. Much more of an animal than a human being. How do you override it to choose to be human? Ellie Mayer. Two-word answer. What do you do to override and become a human being instead of an animal? What?
Free will.
Right. To make the choice and say, now, say, but wait a second. What makes it free? What makes it free will if one is much easier than the other? So tell me. Anybody here? Shlimey, what's your favorite football team?
The Vikings.
So I'm not sure we talked about this. Would you rather they win or would you rather they lose?
Win.
And what's easier for them, to win or to lose? Lose. That's life. It's better to win, easier to lose. But if you don't work at life, the natural result is losing. When you're climbing a mountain, it's very difficult. Much easier to let go, just not as good for you. Right? You get it? And therefore, you're part of the animal kingdom, but I'm here to get the maximum. I'm here to win. I'm going to work hard. Your natural state is animal. You have to override it to be the human being. You begin to understand. At Matan Torah, 71 nations, 70 of them said no, the Jews said yes. And as we said yesterday, most of the descendants of those people at Matan Torah are now goyim, because what we have here is a system of creating human beings. We're not here to create numbers. That's what Christianity and Islam is for. We're here to create human beings, not membership. The people who thought that we got to worry about membership created Reform and Conservative to make it much easier. And they're all gone. I mean, the people who started that, and they're on their way out. To understand what the point is, you're an animal that can choose to be human. Got to go back. I want pleasure. I better find out what's true. The third problem. Chaim, are you a yochid or are you part of a tzibur? Are you an individual or are you part of a group? Menachem? Yochid. What? Both. You are both the Yochid and part of a Tzibur. Menachem, which are you more of? Yochid and part of a Tzibur. A Yochid. And what did you say, Chaim? Tzibur. I'd like to show a hands here. How many people think that in a world where you are both, you're more of a Yochid than Tzibur? Show of hands. Let's see. And hands down, how many people who think more of a Tzibur? You already voted on Yochid.
No.
It's chlor. You are a massive, much. You are more. You are more than the imbalance between being an animal and a human being. More than the imbalance of being a child and an adult is the massive imbalance that you are 99% tzibur and less than 1% yochid. Now, you make the mistake, Menachem, because the most recent part of you is the yochid. You are different than everybody else. You ever hear a thing, Menachem, you are unique, just like everybody else. But you are 99% tzibur, and the only way you can ever create a shtickle yochid of you is by being aware of that. First, let's look at the basic three things about yourself. Time, place, and people. Olam shana nefesh, but look at... What year were you born?
1992.
What? 1992. All right. So supposing you were born in 1892... No, and it's 1915. No, that you're 23 years old. Right. And you're 23. And God saw to it that every atom of your body is exactly the same as it is now. You're born and you ate this, and you ate that, and everything is in exactly the same place. Do you realize you'd be a totally different person? Of course. Because you don't even know that you are massively the result of what the world was since 1992. And what if you're born not in 1892, but in 892? Or in 1992 before the Common Era. Again, do you understand? You are massively the result of the times you were born.
What do we mean exactly by Sibor?
You are the result of the world around you that created you. And the biggest mistake you could make is thinking that you... It's an old joke, an old thing from... about this song singer on the last major show in Las Vegas. So he goes out... And he's old blue eyes, but it's not as blue as they used to. He has blue tinted eye and things. He's a little bald, so he gets his $85,000 toupee. Now he's going to get a little slim, but now he's not. So he gets this $40,000 corsage, totally normal. And pancake makers, so make him look the same. And he gets out on the stage, and what's the first thing he sings? I gotta be me. Gentlemen. Okay. You are massively the result of your time. Now let's add to it. Where were you born?
Manhattan.
Manhattan, 1992, but you were raised where?
Farrakhan.
The hospital in Manhattan, Farrakhan, New York area. Supposing you were born in 1992, but not in the New York area, but in Boise, Idaho. Or in Lima, Peru, or Tehran, or Pakistan. You'd be a totally different person. And you think you're you. Or suppose you're born in 1992, raised in New York. What's your family name?
Solomon.
Solomon, but not by the Solomons, but by the Hayakawas of New York. Or the Hernandezes of New York. Or by the Solomon, you know, the president of the Reform Temple, Solomon. You would be a totally different person. And you would think that that was you. You hear the problem? Any one of those would create a totally different you, and you didn't choose any three of them. Begin to look at the mix and understand. You are massively, and begin to understand why you have to really be very careful to be a part of Klal Yisrael, because you are so massively the result of the world around you. Do you understand 99% of the reason that you're frum is because you chose your ancestors well before you were born? Get it? You get it? You don't get it?
No.
So, what if you were born to a Jewish family who 10 generations ago dropped that they were at Matan? How many generations ago was Matan Torah?
150 years.
I'm going to say 44.
How many generations?
Well,
how many? I don't know either. But it's about, a good guess would be about 100 generations. Because the average generation is 33 years. So three generations to a century. It's been 3,300 years. So 33 centuries times 3 is 99. We're around 100. Why do I say that the average generation is 33 years? Because it's an unbelievably solid number. 33. If you're secular. So you start having your kids when you're in your late 20s and you finish in your late 30s.
Earlier,
what?
It used to be earlier.
What?
But they would have kids.
No, okay, so let's hear. We'll go through a minute. In the Frum world, you start when you're late teens. You go up to 50. Still comes out. In other words, for every kid who had a parent who was 18, another one has a kid whose parent was 48. So it generally evens out around the early 30s. And by the, you understand, you don't live your life in years. You live your life as a life. And therefore, 100 generations back to Matan Torah. People think, oh, who knows what could happen in all that time. 100 generations back to Matan Torah. And how many generations does the average person span? What's the generally span, lifespan?
2.5.
5. How? Tell me, Shlomo, do you have a nice exchange with your grandparents? Yeah, most people. And their parents. Not as nice as the grandparents. Okay. Your parents, your grandparents, your parents, your friends, your children, and your grandchildren. The average person has communication with 5 generations. You understand? Well, a person could have great-grandparents. But Abraklor, the ease, clearly, and therefore you have 100 generations from Matan Torah in which the average person in those had overlap. That's the idea. People say, well, who knows? Again, that life doesn't go by the year. It goes by the life. I mean, so we've been 100 generations since Matan Torah. Take the most, so a Torah Jew has been part of Torah for 100 generations. What about a Reformed Jew? How long has a Reformed Jew been part of Torah, Jewish, Torah world? What? How many? How many generations back does a Reformed Jew have to go to the point that his family was Shomer Shabbos?
Same.
What?
Most.
No, how many generations back?
5-6 generations.
No. No, again. Reformed Jew is not a Shomer Shabbos. His parents are not Shomer Shabbos. How far back does he have to go to the point that his family was Shomer Shabbos?
It's only been like the rush of the year since the
about maximum 4 generations. So people say, what are you talking about? Reformed Jews started in 1820. Yeah, but Reformed Jews in 1820 are all gone because Reform movement itself is like one big gas chamber. You know, you go in as a Jew, you come out dead. You know, probably more people escaped Auschwitz than escaped that. So you understand the basic. The Reformed Jew today is only a Jew because in 1820 his Zayde said pui to reform. So at least he has a little more time to make it. They're not the Reformed Jews of 1820. They're the Reformed Jews of the 1920s, 1950s, 1960s who dropped out. That's why they still haven't disappeared. The average person, three, four generations from the time they become Reformed till they either do tshuva, which is a small number, or they marry goyim and they're at the end of the game. So picture this idea. You are, Chaim, you are both the Yochid and part of a Tzibur, but you are not, you as a Jew, you are 99% as a result of having chosen your Tzibur well. Because if from Matan Torah till now, we should have numbered 250 million, we talked about yesterday, and really we only number 12 million, and of those 10 million are in the process of disappearing too. It means you happen to be from that thin line of people who kept Torah, and even if you're Reform, if you're a Reformed Jew, see the difference. In other words, a Torah Jew can your families are from, your parents, so you're part of the line of Shmiras HaMitzvahs for 100 generations. The Reformed Jew, he was only part of Torah for 96 generations. But 2, 3, 4 generations ago, they dropped it. What do you call a Jew who says as follows? I've traced my family back to Mount Sinai. And we were there, and for 90 generations, we kept the Torah. But 10 generations ago, we decided to drop it. What do you call that person?
A goy.
A goy. There is no such Reformed Jew. And remember once I asked this question, said, how many people here can tell me that 100 years ago your family was not Torah observant? And only one hand went up, a woman with the tichel, and she was a Georgist. Chaim, to understand, we all think that we are both, we all think that we are, most of us think that we are more of a Yochid than all of us, everybody gets that idea. Because we see of ourselves, we've got to be real careful that except for Yechidei Sgula, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, and Dov, Shalom, except for Yechidei Sgula, you got to know that who we are is massively that we made the, we came from the people who made the right choices in terms of Klal Yisrael. But you are both a Yochid and part of a Tzibur, you are 99% the result of your Tzibur. Let's look at it. Why is it that so many people that when they left Europe and they came to America, 95% of the people dropped out of Yiddishkeit? What? Oh, and right, and they didn't drop out. The guys kept it, but their kids dropped it. Because the average person comes along and he said, the guy who came to America could have dropped it, but even if he kept it, he said, look, I'm an Amoritz and I'm a good Jew, so I'll go to America and my kid will also be an Amoritz and he'll be a good Jew. He didn't realize that you were an Amoritz among Yidden in Poland and now you're going to go to America, and flushes it away. It is a disaster. We just have to understand that Kol Man Dovid Rachmano L'Tava, if everything God does for the best, is understand that Rabban Shem says, Chaim, I don't want you to be a Jew because you picked your bubi right. Because your bubi's bubi said, Nasav and Ishmat Sinai. I want you to be a Jew. And look at everything that's going on in the world today and understand that Rabban Shem is saying, I don't want to say thank you to all the goyim who kept you Jewish. I want you to do it yourself. And Hanami, you have to be in the right island. But I don't want a world. Go to America and make decisions. So we have to understand what's going... Now, why is there... I'm going to end with a story, and then tomorrow we'll talk about practical application. Getting married, tzniyus, picking your friends. Looking at those different elements in combination. But to understand that the essential reason that people are dropping off now is because 50 years, and even in the Jewish world, even the Orthodox world, even in the yeshiva world, guys in the yeshiva world who are doing things that the average goy 50 years ago would have been too mavuyish to do. Because Odom Nimshach Achar Svivoysev. Because when the world 50 years ago said, only a manuvel does this, when the goy said it, we find it very easy to do the right thing. Now, the Goyisha world says, Hakol Mechunin Lach, Hakol Shruyim Lach, and everything is mutter. And even we have a hard time because you didn't know what a part of a tzibur you were. That the Rabban Shem is saying, I don't... 2 minutes. I don't want a world where you're Jewish because the Goyim are nice. Because the goyim are bali midos. Makes perfect sense. The Rabban Shem is taking it away from them. And understand, when a guy says, but how do you expect me to do? What do you mean, how do you expect? 50 years ago, I expected 50 years ago from the average decent goy to do it right. Do you hear what I'm saying, guys? Shlomo, you hear what I'm saying? But the more you understand it, the more you'll be able to also find the koyach. To know yourself that you don't know who you are, figure out who you are and understand. Quick story. A guy at Eish HaTorah had a friend who was becoming a Reform rabbi, and he came to Eish. He came to a question and answer thing. So 20 guys pack in and see, joust. So I let him, his name was Matt. Nice guy, Matt. And I said, this question. Matt says, Rabbi, can you please explain what you Orthodox Jews have against gay marriage? So I said, no, I'm not going to explain. But instead, I'm going to explain why I'm not going to explain. You're asking me the question. Let's go back 100 years. It's 1915. You're a Reform rabbi. I'm Orthodox. And I say the following. It's 1915, Matt, and you don't believe God gave the Torah. Tell me, if you don't believe God gave the Torah, what would prevent you from ever doing a marriage between a man and another man for the purpose of having a sexual union? What would you have said to me, Matt, in 1915? Would you say, why not? Or would you have said, that's the sickest thing I ever heard, and I can't believe you'd ever believe we would do such thing? What would you have said?
Second one.
And he was honest enough to say the second one. Yeah, that's true. And therefore, what, and I answer you, you have no concept of right and wrong. You have no concept of yourself. That while we look and ask God what we should be doing to create a human being, you ask the goy. Or I'll ask you right now, Matt, right now, it's 2015. You don't believe God gave the Torah. What would prevent you from doing a marriage between a man and his dog for the same purposes? You're going to tell me that's the sickest thing you ever heard, but everyone in this room knows that if 20 years from now the goyim are doing it, you will do it too. So what's the point of explaining anything? You have no values. Your entire thing is being a Jew means asking the goy what's right and what's wrong. And now the question is, are we going to be different than that? Can you make the choice of being a human being, because Torah was not given to us to create Kilu Jews, to a human being, the one who's an animal who can make tough choices and be more than an animal. And we gotta know, Klal Yisrael will make it. The real thing we should worry about is ourselves, each one of us. Klal Yisrael will make it. I want you to be selfish. After all, Hillel says, he may not neely mealy. Tomorrow I want to go into specific points in yonim of marriage, in yonim of tzibur, about how you deal with, you know, what's going on, open Orthodox. Let's look at those, and we'll be able to look at these three basic areas. And tomorrow I'll talk, I mentioned yesterday, tomorrow I'll talk about why that every Jew is both a Jew and a goy, Jew and an anti-Semite, Jew and a Nazi. That's tomorrow's class. Okay.